This is Nick Cooper with Houston Indie Media Radio on KPFT, and I'm here with Nick. Nick, do you want to introduce yourself? And then if you could read that post you wrote the other day, I think it was really important information about Gaza.
Sure. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. So my name is Nick Swile. I live in Houston. I'm a member of the BDS Houston Collective. BDS stands for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, which is a nonviolent, peaceful, global international movement to put pressure on Israel via boycott, divestment, and sanctions. It's really modeled after South Africa's anti-apartheid movement, and I've been a member of the BDS Collective for several years now. So, in thinking about what's been going on in Gaza, it's really been remarkable to me to see how distorted the narrative around Gaza is here in the U.S. I've seen many well-meaning people sometimes end up echoing Israeli propaganda points unknowingly. And so I've asked myself, what is the correct frame of reference if I was going to explain this to someone so that they could understand the background? And what is the context that would be needed to understand what's going on in Gaza? So first, and I would say most importantly, it's really crucial to understand that the majority of people in Gaza, 70% by some accounts, are refugees who are ethnically cleansed, or whose parents or grandparents were ethnically cleansed, from their ancestral villages from what today is called Israel, as far as back as 1948, by the Zionist movement. And under international law, they have the right to return home, and this is enshrined in United Nations General Assembly Resolution 194. The problem is, however, that Israel prevents them from doing so under long-standing policies that discriminate on the basis of religion and or ethnicity and or race, and that seek to maintain Israel's quote-unquote Jewish majority. So by contrast, for example, any person considered Jewish by Israeli law has the right to immigrate to Israel and claim citizenship. That's clearly not true for Palestinians. So when you hear the Palestinians invoking the right to return, they're really talking about returning to their homes or their ancestral villages. That's why the protests have been ongoing since March 30th of 2018, which is what Palestinians call Land Day. And that's why the protests have been dubbed the Great Return March. The Great Return March really symbolizes that return back home for Palestinians. Second, I think it's important to kind of remember that in addition to having been ethnically cleansed from their ancestral homes, Gazans still live under military occupation. Now, Gaza is still considered an occupied territory under international law. And this is United Nations Security Council Resolution 242 and United Nations Security Council Resolution 338. And this is despite Israel unilaterally, quote-unquote, disengaging in 2005, because Israel still controls what goes in and out of Gaza. Israel controls Gaza's territorial waters, their natural resources, and their airspace. Essentially, under international law, it's what we would call Israel having effective control over Gaza. And so Israel is really an occupying power. And under international law, every people has the right to resist their occupier. And that also means that they have the right to resist their occupier, if they choose to, by force and by violence. Having said that, despite that being their right, it's really remarkable to me how little violence there was and how little violence there has been from the Palestinian side in these ongoing protests that have been ongoing now for about 6 weeks. And I say this because when you look at the casualty account between Israelis and Palestinians, you'll see that no Israelis have been killed and no Israelis have been injured, versus the huge amount of violence from the Israeli side, accounting for essentially 111 Palestinians being killed and 12,700 being injured. I'm quoting numbers here per the Gaza Health Ministry. So these are absolutely astronomical numbers and very, very obviously one-sided. Third, in addition to having been ethnically cleansed and, of course, living under military occupation, Gazans have been living under an aerial, naval, and land blockade imposed by Israel and also Egypt since 2007. So it's been 11-plus years that people in Gaza have been living under blockade. 1.8 million Gazans are literally trapped in an area that is 360 square kilometers. To give people an idea of what that is, it's about half the size of New York City. They're unable to leave that tiny enclave with very few exceptions, like medical evacuees or people working for international organizations and some businessmen. And so Gaza has been rightly, in my opinion, described as the world's largest open-air prison. And this by somebody who's no friend of Gazans, David Cameron, the former Prime Minister of England. So the blockade is a big problem. And it also means that little of life's basic amenities make it through to Gaza, and really only under explicit Israeli authorization. If you look at the Gazan situation when it comes to drinking water, it's absolutely atrocious. 95% plus of Gazans do not have access to safe drinking water via Gaza's public water network, because their one and only freshwater aquifer is compromised by virtue of seawater penetrating into it, forcing the vast majority to rely on water tanks and trucked water at exorbitant cost. Really think the situation that we have, unfortunately, right now in Flint, Michigan. That's pretty much what you have in Gaza when it comes to water. Non-drinking water is also severely restricted. Only 25 to 50% of power demand is met, and very few have access to running electricity. 50% of Gazans are food insecure. 40% plus are unemployed, and 40% live below the poverty line. Now, I'm quoting these numbers that came out of a United Nations or UNESCO July 2017 report. So this is, again, per the United Nations. Fourth, in addition to being people that have been ethnically cleansed, militarily occupied, and blockaded, Gazans are periodically bombed from the air, from the sea, and from the land by Israeli forces because they dare resist against Israel. And Israel, of course, always uses the Hamas boogeyman to justify essentially killing thousands and injuring tens of thousands of people every time they drop their bombs from F-16s and invade Gaza. And this honestly occurs and reoccurs every few years. Finally, for context purposes, the protests that started on March 30th, 2018 were initially called by civil society activists, not Hamas. Now, I have to say Hamas has endorsed these protests, and they have basically participated in these protests, but these were not Hamas-led or Hamas-initiated protests. And the purpose of the protests were multifold, including raising awareness about the plight of Gaza under blockade, and most importantly, calling for and attempting to reclaim the right to return to their ancestral villages. Now, you'll hear a lot about, you know, the protests being in reaction to the U.S. Embassy move to Jerusalem. That's partly true. At least the protests a couple of days ago were partially aimed at the U.S. Embassy move to Jerusalem, but that really was secondary, I would say, not the main focus or the root cause of the protests. And so with that as context, let's really now address the main Israeli talking point, justifying their massacre, the massacre that's been ongoing since March 30th, which has killed, again, over 100 people, injured over 12,000 people. And their talking point has been that these protests are really violent riots that have been orchestrated by Hamas to break through into Israel and kill a whole bunch of Israelis, and therefore that Israel has the right to self-defense by shooting quote-unquote terrorists trying to violate their sovereignty. Now, it's important for people to appreciate that the fence separating Gaza from what today is referred to as Israel is not a border. In fact, Israel has no declared borders. All of historic Palestine, what today is called Israel, plus the occupied territories, so Gaza, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem, all of that is under Israeli control. So it's better to think of that fence as literally a cage. A cage, basically, with almost 2 million people behind that cage that are literally not free to leave. Second, under international law, an occupying power does not have the right to self-defense. This is very confusing sometimes for people to kind of understand, but really what it comes down to is an occupying power has at most the right to police the occupied territory, which means that the use of lethal force is a measure of last resort, not first resort, and only under threat of imminent violence or imminent death, right? And so this is important because as an occupying power, you can't just invoke your right to self-defense against that occupied territory because you're the occupier. And fact, I would argue that it's the reverse. Palestinians have the right to self-defense. At any rate, most importantly, and leaving aside, you know, those technicalities, I would say Gazans are protesting their ethnic cleansing, their dispossession, their occupation, and their siege, and really trying to reclaim their rights by resisting Israeli oppression. And they're doing that via, I would say, a massive display of civil disobedience. Although they really do have every right to engage in armed resistance per international law, they have overwhelmingly chosen to be unarmed in a showcase of epic bravery and courage. They have burned tires to obstruct Israeli sniper visibility. They've used tennis rackets to hit back tear gas canisters and slingshots to protect themselves. While some protesters have tried to breach the fence by using pliers to try and cut through their cage. Now, really only seeing a few incidents in all these videos that I've been watching where protesters have used a couple of Molotov cocktails and one, what Israel would call an arson kite, being flown into Israel. I mean, it's been overwhelmingly unarmed. And when they've done this, they've really done this facing one of the world's most well-armed and ruthless armies in the world, the IDF, which has not hesitated to shoot and tear gas tens of thousands. And there's so much video evidence where we have, where we've seen unarmed people being shot and killed. And unlike what Israel will say, some of those killings occurred nowhere near the fence, separating Gaza from the rest of what today is called Israel. And we've seen members of the press being shot at. We've seen hundreds being tear gassed from the sky via drones dropping canisters on their heads. And again, nowhere near the fence. And I'll finish this by saying that every people has a right to live free and in dignity. And Gazans have shown and continue to show the world that they're willing to die for it. And so in my opinion, we here in the West have a duty to frame their struggle correctly and to amplify their voices in every possible way.